You're listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast with contributors from MLSMultiplex.com. Hey guys, welcome to the MLS Multiplex podcast. It is not Drew introing us for today's episode because we have a special episode. For the first time ever, we are joined by an MLS player. He is a former 14th overall draft pick from the FC Dallas in 2020, former WAC Defensive Player of the Year, Connecticut University and Seattle University, student, and from Manhattan, and is not the oldest person on the podcast. So Josh is still hoping for somebody to come on the podcast that outages him. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nkosi Tafara. Nkosi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to some great conversation and learning more about y'all and vice versa.
We're excited to have you. Drew, Josh, I should probably ask you two how you're doing. So how are you guys doing?
I'm doing all right. The weather has gotten pretty crazy, I think, for everybody in the U.S. But like here in Georgia, it's all of a sudden extremely windy. It's like back down to 50 degrees. So all this like really nice weather we've been having is gone. And so that's probably been the biggest thing in for normal people, but for us soccer people, right, the Super League has been dominating talk for everybody. So that's really been on my mind a lot. And it's been something that I've been talking to my friends about a lot. And like, you know, right now, Florentino Perez is making a joke of himself over there in Madrid, Spain. He's saying some pretty stupid and funny things. So that's probably been the craziest thing that's going on right now. Drew, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there, man. The Super League was a fun spiel. I got to see that kind of unfold and then fall apart in like 48 hours. So that was a wild time to see. But yeah, semester is almost up, man. We got finals going on. I learned how to hold a bottle before the podcast today, as I learned how I was holding a bottle wrong my whole life as a 21-year-old. But yeah, it's been going good, man. Getting ready to wrap up the semester. Super. Got to watch an MLS for the first time this past weekend. So it's been a good week, almost done with semester. Happy to be here.
Glad you guys are having good weeks here in Toronto. It snowed, so we're having a good time in mid-April. But other than that, got an exam tomorrow, so hopefully I don't do terrible on that. And then an exam next week, and I'm done for the winter semester, and then I got a spring course, so yay. But let's stop talking about us, because we don't matter. Instead, we should dive into why you're really here. Nkosi, and that is the BPC. So why don't you start off sort of giving us a bit of a brief overview as to how the BPC sort of formed last year and really why the players wanted to create an organization to start pushing for racial equality in the US and in Canada.
Yeah, so this was probably mid-March, around April, roughly when the pandemic was kind of starting, within the wake of George Floyd. And Justin Morrow had reached out. He started like an Instagram group chat with just a lot of the other Black veterans of the MLS throughout the league to kind of express their displeasure, but in a way in which they can get active about it and how they could decide to maybe change things. They were in a position of power. They all have a voice. We all have a voice to some extent, but we're stronger together. So then, yeah, he came up with this, I guess, general idea. And then another household name within our organization, Quincy Ameriquois, who's, I'd say, pretty outspoken in the few times I have talked to him. He virtually kind of really wanted to kick it off, start knowing like our own genuine organization, put a name to it, and really, really get it kickstarted. So
I guess maybe sort of bouncing off of that, when did you join? Were you sort of one of the initial members, or was this something that sort of they came and reached out to you, like maybe closer to MLS's back to sort of let you know what's sort of going on and why, like sort of a bit about the organization, how you can get involved?
Yeah, so it was my first year last year. So a lot of things were very foreign to me. And then along the way, I think it was a little bit before MLS was back in June, maybe a month or so. So probably roughly May, I'd say they started sort of an email chain and just kind of almost like a game of telephone. Guys finding another guy like, yo, well, what's your email? We want to get at least all of the Black players in the MLS on this email chain so we can sort of broadcast this idea that we have. That's some of like the older veterans of the league we're talking about, like Sean Johnson and Tesho Akindele and guys like that. So they started an email chain. I gave them my email. And then we started. JMO pretty much does it all. He's the executive member. He really, he leads all the Zoom calls, gets everything going. But I hadn't reached out. I didn't really know of it until it came to me. But I was in love with the idea because I'm always trying to get active in any way possible. And certainly at the time last year, I was definitely trying to be more active within my community as much as I could.
So you mentioned, all this emailing going on and it's sort of kind of filtering through to all of you guys in MLS. How do you guys communicate regularly throughout, especially now that you guys are getting back into the regular season? You know, how do you guys keep up that communication with each other in that organization?
Yeah, so as I was saying, JMO, the executive member, he'll send out an email maybe a week or two in advance, depending on how strenuous some schedules might be, depending on games and things. Just letting people know, hey, we're scheduling a call for example, Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, because a lot of guys either have games or are in hotels for games. So we do them mostly later nights now. And then he'll send out the email, and then we all hop on the Zoom call, as much of us that can attend at the time. And just like we're doing now, he'll record it for the guys that couldn't attend. And he just drops all the updated bullet points and such of what we're getting at throughout the Zoom call, and then any questions, comments, concerns, things of that nature, you know.
How often are you guys communicating? Is this weekly that you guys are having Zoom calls, maybe a couple times a week, or every other week?
Yeah, we have them bi-weekly, I'd say, because everyone with their schedules, a lot of these guys have like families. I mean, I have a family, but not a family that I've conjured up of my own. But yeah, a lot of guys have children and things, so trying to work around their schedules. Every so often, when one or two guys don't press the mute button and their kids are screaming in the back. So it's guys are definitely making do with what they can, and I really appreciate that. But so we meet roughly bi-weekly during the season, maybe a little bit more so often, depending on the type of events we're scheduling or if he needs to really call for an emergency meeting. But most of the time it's scheduled and pretty cyclic, I'd say.
Yeah, and when you were talking, you mentioned a lot of players' names like Sean Johnson. Is it like mostly player led, or like are coaches involved, or like maybe anyone in like the league front office, or is it all like a player type gig?
Yeah, it is an entirely player led organization. We have had, no staff members, no coaches, no league representatives of such. It is all player led from start to finish. Some of the youngest players we have that want to be involved, and then some of the oldest Black players that want to be involved. And one of them recently retired, Ray Gaddis, but he's still pretty involved with the group as well. But just all players. I think 170 or so. That might be a rough estimate, but somewhere ahead of that. Just any Black player in the MLS who wants to be a part of it is more than welcome. Yeah.
Yeah, and you talked about like how you guys communicate like on different teams and stuff, but are there like players within FC Dallas, whether it's like academy or like senior first team, that maybe like in Dallas's like locker room that you guys talk about the BBC a little more because you're there, playing side by side each other all the time?
So this past season in 2020, we had one other member who was one of the more veterans throughout the league. He used to play for Philadelphia, Fabrice Picault, goes by Fafa. Good friend of mine. He was recently traded to Houston, but me and him were sort of the more piggybackers of FC Dallas at the time. But then after he had gotten traded, I then became what was like, I guess, club representative, but like I'm the oldest Black player we have on the team. Like I'm only 24. And this is only my second year in the league. So I talk with some of the other guys on the team. There's only four of us, actually. So I just give them the brief updates if anything's like incredibly groundbreaking, anything that they really need to know. But we talk about it roughly. But yeah, the Super League has been on the tongues for a lot of people recently, I can say.
What are your thoughts on the Super League?
I'm certainly not in favor of it. I don't. I love it. Like the way I got here is from a good underdog story. I love the grind. I love a good underdog story, like how Leicester could go and win the Prem. I'm not even a Leicester fan. They ransacked every team in the league, but how a team like Burnley could beat a first place team like City or United or however the case may be, whatever league it is in. I love the competition. The English Premier League is one of the most competitive leagues. But yeah, taking that away and just having like big game after big game, it really kind of takes the value away from the game itself.
What European club do you support? Because I'm a Newcastle fan because of Miguel Almiron. So I love the underdog too, man. Like what's your English club? Do you have an English club?
Yeah, okay. So this is going to sound like I'm not an underdog at this point. there's backstory within it. So I'll start with the backstory to just not seem like an entire fraud right now. But so growing up, I liked to just be different and go against all things that my brother did. It didn't really matter. Just whatever he was doing, it's like, let's do the opposite, no matter how difficult it was. So my whole family were Yankee fans. We were just a Met fan, just by myself, a lone Met fan. Didn't know anything about baseball, just went for it. And my brother, he was the United fan. He's 2 years older than me. So you're seeing where this is going now. I was like, well, we're going to have to be a City fan here. And then, you know, things turned out for the better. That oil money started hitting. We started making other big signings besides James Milner, when you could start bringing in the Yaya Torres, the David Silvas, the Sergio Agueros all of a sudden. And it certainly fast-forwarded very rapidly. But yeah, throughout the Super League, like I was strongly contemplating. I was like, I just don't know if I'll be a City fan anymore. And I was for like a couple days, I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I was like about to be a Dortmund fan. I think I was just going to hop on that bandwagon. They got Jude Bellingham out there and I love what he does. He's sensational. But they've recently dropped out. They must have felt my displeasure. So they've recently dropped out. So we're in good terms again.
I won't say I'm the same way. I'm a Spurs fan, and you know, obviously things have been pretty rough for Spurs, and they, you know, they sacked Mourinho very, very under the radar. Probably the best time to do that. But I've already been kind of looking to jump ship. The Super League really, really helps that decision a lot. But it's rough. It's rough being a Spurs fan, a Newcastle fan.
I heard City's he's going to Valencia, I think. Mourinho, is it? I don't know if this is true. But
ooh, a teammate
today told me, a teammate Ryan from Seville, Spain, like told me he was going to Valencia. That was just
you couldn't be breaking news right now.
Yeah. I don't know. We could be breaking. We'll see. But I like the idea of it. It sounded interesting. Something that definitely under the radar. So I don't – we will wait on that one. We'll see.
See what Mourinho does with Yunus Musa? Sign me up, man. I'm all for it.
You know what I'm saying? He likes a good American player. We'll see what he does. He'll have him playing in the five at the back, but he'll do it well.
I was a little disappointed, I'll be honest, when you said Jude Bellingham first instead of Gio Reyna when mentioning Dortmund. But hopefully the Americans don't completely remove you from any sort of thoughts in terms of the national team.
They won't. They shouldn't. They certainly shouldn't. All due respect to Gio Reyna, of course, and all the other young national team members. We have a couple on my team alone. So I do pay them their respects. But Jude Bellingham really tore City up. So I really had to show him his respects, for sure, especially just being 17, playing in the Champions League against one of the greatest managers and one of the best teams in the world. He needed a little bit of respect on his name that he, I guess, already didn't have. But I know, I understand. I told you, we do the different things. That's what we just do different things. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. But you were mentioning young people, so I think it's probably a good time to sort of figure out a bit more about the BBC's sort of future. And I was wondering how much involvement you and the BBC have with sort of youth soccer on a ground level, and whether or not you sort of plan to do a lot more with it in the future.
Yeah, so we have a couple initiatives. They're working on this one thing with FC Harlem that's kind of in the works, and then it ties into So we work with a couple other organizations as well, just to really, like I was saying, get that strength of voice projected. So it is, we work with the NBA, PA, NBA Players Association, and then as well as the Black Women's Players Association for the Women's Soccer League. So then, yeah, that is kind of something that I guess they wanted to get more involved with younger Black girls, kind of getting their own voice, feeling a representation. I feel like representation is everything. And that's something we talked about early on as well, trying to get more Black coaches throughout the league. It hasn't been our main focus with the youth, with everything that's going on, but it's one of those things that you keep in the back of your mind in any way you can help going forward. You always, yeah, then you always bring it up once it ever kind of comes around. But definitely, yeah, we've been working with FC Harlem in their youth programs, I believe.
So does that sort of stem into what you're hoping to accomplish in the 2021 season, sort of expand into more of the youth stuff? Or is there sort of a different direction that BPC is hoping to go for 2021?
Yes. So we have one thing that is virtually set in stone. A couple of other things are still in the air speculative, but one thing that is definitely set in stone is a couple more mini pitch initiatives. I don't know if you had seen a few of those built throughout America. There was one in New York that I can't wait to get back to and actually go visit it. That'll be really awesome to see. But yeah, the different mini pitches that were just kind of being built for, like I was saying, the young kids, not even any young type of Black or white, just any young kid that wants to play footy in a good environment on a good field. That's really hard to find in a lot of cities sometimes, certainly in New York. I know it was definitely a challenge to find. So the mini pitch initiatives are something that is more so on the front page of what we have going on. And then a couple of other things down the line, we'll see how those conjure up, I'll say.
Can you tease anything?
Can I tease anything? I could, but I don't know if I should, you know, just to, that's the thing. I'll say, yeah, keep an ear out, and who knows if you can, if you're attentive and you wanted to get on, you know, your Sherlock Holmes type of mystery in terms of, you know, just really making some deductions, you might be able to piece some things together. I'll say that's a very poor teaser. I know.
Hey, it's good enough. Anything is good enough. We're happy if anything is said on this podcast. We're just happy to have you here, to be honest. But you launched an initiative last season around jerseys, where you sort of did like a jersey giveaway, I believe. Is there anything sort of planned in the future to do more involving kits or anything more involving MLS, involving on-field action?
Yeah, so the jersey initiative, something that I loved a lot, actually. Hopefully we can do that again. I'd love to get my own, just my own personal benefit. They were very nice, honestly. I think that's something that, yeah, we were talking about it recently on the last call, and I think like, I could definitely share this. Yeah, we were talking about it on the last call and just the success with it, and then maybe if we're not doing jerseys, maybe another article of clothing that we could help raise money, but also fans would love to purchase, like a good balance there. So going forward, yeah, I had a couple ideas. It was something that was just brought up really quickly in the chat, and they were like, yeah, just brainstorm on this, think of it, think about any other ideas we might want to do, maybe something very similar, virtually the same, or branch out into something different. I had one idea that I haven't really fully stepped into yet, kind of waiting for the next call to get some maybe permission, I guess we'll say. But yeah, I wanted to maybe work with like this Black owned clothing company to see if we can sort of have a collab with the BPC to some extent. Yes, yeah, so some things like that. So yes, that may be in the works in the coming months, possibly, for sure. Yeah.
I am very excited to see what that looks like, because the jerseys were really, really cool. I like them a lot. But have you had any sort of conversations with MLS about potentially wearing those jerseys, like in a game? Obviously, it wouldn't work because they're all Black and you can't really have two teams wearing all Black, but sort of something along those lines of like a jersey collaboration in honor of some sort of set date where the entire MLS wears these kits?
We have not, but incredible idea that I'm all for. We have not as of yet. I know there's always kind of a big hubbub about different types of jerseys. They want things to be pretty spot on, and a lot of things have to be approved with advertisements and other things along the line. So, but I'll slide that in there on the next call. I like that one. That is a good idea, because at the very least, it'll raise more money. And I know the MLS and the owners like money. So, yes.
I was just about to say the Parley kits always seem to be so popular. I know, especially here in Georgia and Atlanta, those things fly off the shelves really fast. I have no doubt that a Black Players Collective, Black Players for Change kits would do the same. And like you said, raise money. And I'm sure, hopefully, if that idea comes to fruition, can turn that money around and help out, a bunch of local areas and all that sort of stuff. But I wanted to ask you, Nkosi, you've been all over the country, from New York, spent time in Connecticut, in Washington, Seattle, now you're in Texas. But one of the things, I noticed kind of trying to learn more about you before we hopped on this interview, when we found out we were going to be interviewing you, I just wanted to know how your time all over the country is sort of shaped your desire to be so vocal about social justice issues, because just one look through your Twitter and you can tell that you're really active on this front, which is great. But I just wanted to know sort of how, experiences in your life have led to that.
Yeah. Great question. Love it. So I'd say, kind of growing up, and then maybe the nature of my situation, along with the nurture that my parents had given me within the household. It was kind of something that was always known. My mom always really made sure not that I knew I was Black, but just kind of through a pride essence, but also there's certain things that you might not be able to do because of the color of your skin. And at a young age, it's just what is this woman talking about? I don't know. You kind of brush it off. You're just like, let me go play FIFA. All right. Come on. But then, as I got older, and then I started really, maybe not thinking about it, but these moments actually did start to happen. I still was because you don't really want to listen to your parents that much. She always told me that I was a very outspoken individual. She liked to compare my brother and I. He was more of the Martin Luther King, I guess, and I was the Malcolm X, the militant one, very outspoken, very sturdy and strong in his beliefs. I'd say just as I got older, I wanted to not only not do it for myself or really, but make it better for the next generation after me, that's what my parents did for me. That's what I felt a lot of people did in my area that knew at the same time. I didn't grow up in a predominantly Black neighborhood. It was mostly Caucasian, and with my high school as well. And most of the teams that I've played on, I have been the only Black person on the team in high school, throughout middle school, all my club teams. Even in college, not at the University of Connecticut, we had a lot of Africans on the team, which was very good. That was just kind of where they chose to recruit from. So that was one of the things that kind of just started to maybe not hit home, but I wanted to focus more on it because it is a really big issue. So it's I know how unfortunate it is to be discriminated against. I like to help anyone who is, I guess, being discriminated upon, because I know really how unfortunate it is. That's why I'm wearing this shirt, so I could... We're already here talking about the BPC, so I knew this would be a predominantly Black conversation, but now I would have normally worn a Black Lives Matter type shirt, but that is the context of the conversation. So I wanted to put on for some of the ladies out there to let them know that we're thinking about them. And then other things fighting for the Asians and the Stop Asian Hate movements and other things, small things like that in any way I could help. Because like I said, always it's strength in numbers. That's one of the biggest things.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to bounce off that for our listeners. He's wearing a feminist shirt, as you're talking about, love for the ladies. And you mentioned the NWSL, the Black Women's Player Collective. I think We love NWSL on the show. It's awesome. We don't have a team in Toronto or Atlanta, but we're getting there. The league's expanding and we're excited about it. So how do you guys work with NWSL? Like, I know Mitch Purs is a very predominant player, super good, very active on this, but how do you guys work with NWSL and that players collective over there?
All right. So me personally, and actually a lot of the players within the organization don't directly work with the players in their organization. And I'll say, since we're talking about this now, I would love for that to change. I feel like there could be some extent to where maybe we had a joint Zoom call, because that's pretty simple. But I feel mostly it is, we have 11 current executive members in the BPC, but we also fall under the Players Coalition that kind of helps all of us to some extent. So like some of the Dallas initiatives that I find, I don't really go out and find them. They, I pretty much told them to like, send me anything Dallas related regarding the topic, and then I'll go out and I'll just get active. I don't really care what it's in. I'll just get active. I don't care. I'll just go. So I don't work directly with them. However, I would love for that to change so we could get, so I can know more about them, how I can help. It's hard, like if you don't really know people, you don't know, I guess not what they need, but what they would like assistance in. But I feel, so like our executive members probably, actually, well, they do talk to their executive members, but some of the smaller, I mean, yeah, with the 170 plus members we have, I don't know how many they have either. We don't have any direct connection, especially with our only bi-weekly calls. But that is something that I definitely would love to change, honestly.
Yeah, and I think earlier you talked about some of the leaders that started the organization and are kind of leading this at the league level. I think you mentioned Justin Morrow. But what are some of the guys, whether it be in Dallas's organization or just MLS across teams, but like, what are the guys for you personally that you look up to in the BBC that are kind of leading for you?
So one definite household name, first one that comes to mind, before I even knew of his correlation within the BPC, I was like really impressed with how he played, loved his style of play, was Mark Anthony Kay. He was one of the guys that, yeah, he just smooth on the ball. And in another life, I would have loved to be a six. But you know, we're here at center back. We'll deal with that as we do see fit. But yeah, and then getting to know him just through a few Zoom calls and kind of his messages throughout chat rooms and things, he's even better person than he is soccer player, which definitely says a lot. Another one who's a really cool guy who I've just heard his name through the grapevine, Jeremy Obobese, I think is his last name, is how it's pronounced. He's another one who really headlines a lot of the hard work that's done, certainly in a pretty big and important city like Portland as well. He's one of the more household names. And then, yeah, Sean Johnson's another one with Ray Gaddis, Quincy Ameriqua. These are like a lot of the guys that have strong say. Bill Hamid within the organization. But I'd say, yeah, Mark Anthony Kay was one of the ones that I was just looking up to from a soccer perspective. And then getting to work in the same organization with him is definitely pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to hear you say to people who are very involved in Canada and Morrow and Mark Anthony Kay, like, Kay's from Toronto, went to York University, who's in Toronto as well. And I like, it's great to hear how international it's becoming and how it's not just focusing on the US, it's also focusing on Canada, because racism is a global issue. It's not just an American issue. We are running out of time. And so Josh, I saw you had a question, so I'll let you ask your question. Then I'll ask a few wrap ups, sort of fun things, but do you have anything?
Yeah, I was just, you mentioned center back there briefly, and you know, I was just curious what the transition was like from college to, you spent some time at North Texas SC last year, the USL affiliate for Dallas, and then now looks like you are breaking through into the first team. So what has this transition been like, especially it's now been basically year after year after year consecutively, and just to top it all off, a pandemic's been thrown in the middle of this. So what have those transitions been like for you?
Okay. Before I answer this, I forgot one of my closest, actually in my closest Canadian, Richie Larea. That's the homie. I definitely had to shout him out, and he would have been a little tight if I didn't. So yeah, transition was, all right, so in college, my freshman year at UConn, I'll try and keep this a little quick brief. My freshman year at UConn, I redshirted. I kind of just came in as a miscellaneous player. There was times in training I was playing outside mid. playing like outside back, playing winger, whatever the case. And then my sophomore year, they were sort of structuring me more back into being a center back. But then that whole year, I ended up playing the nine, like off the bench, religiously. I maybe played one or two games at center back. And then the year after that was my first season of like playing consistent games at center back. And then the following year I hadn't played. So then I was like, okay, I want to transfer or go somewhere where I can play. And that was when I went to Seattle. So I kind of only had those two seasons of center back, like in my back pocket with experience and things. So I was learning, one of my biggest, like being less athletic and more tactically aware. That was one of the things, like you can't just be fast and strong all the time. There's guys who are smart that know that. That was an unfortunate lesson I had to learn. But then, yeah, being introduced from college into the professional atmosphere, I loved the struggle of it, because I'd say the first couple weeks, maybe the first couple months, everything was moving too fast for me. And it was very unfortunate, but I loved it. It was very weird. To the point where there's guys flying at me and I want to take a touch, look up, pick my head up, and then maybe do a line breaking pass. But by the time I want to do that, I'm already being tackled. And it's like, okay, this isn't going to work. We're trying to get a contract here. We're trying to, whatever the case may be. So that was incredible. It was like, yeah, my first 3 weeks, I was keeping a training log of all the sessions we had, double days and everything, things that I did good, things that I maybe did not do good, but things that I could work on better. And I'd say probably after the third month that I was there, I felt I was up to speed in the sense of making normal mistakes, no more like college mistakes. And yeah, that took some time. It took a lot of, I guess, honesty within my game. I try and be honest with myself at all times possible, or else it'll be really unfortunate or really tough to be successful. But yeah, that struggle was the pandemic. They kind of threw that in there too. I don't really give myself any slack. It's like everyone's going for it. It's not like, oh, I had this whole season and there was a pandemic. Everyone was going through it. So it's no added negativity to that extent. People were actually a lot worse off than I was. And to be honest with you, 2020 was probably the best year of my life. I mean, I got to sign a professional contract, which was like a lifelong dream at the time. So it was definitely tough to deal with. We had certain trainings that we trained for maybe a month after I had officially signed as like a full team. And then they disbanded the league. Everything stopped. I was training in a movie theater parking lot, on a grassy knoll in the front of an AMC, just because they had a large wall that I could kick the ball off of and do passes with, because they didn't want us training with anybody else before we really knew a lot about the virus. So that was an adjustment. But I mean, yeah, in my summer before going to Seattle, that's kind of what I was doing anyway, training by myself, getting ready to try and get a contract. So now that I feel that I'm up to speed, I'm better mentally. I know a lot more about the game, different ways of how teams and players like to play, a lot of things that I wasn't educated in at a young age that I kind of had to learn later on. So I felt it was minor setbacks, but really loved the struggle.
All right. And I'll wrap us up with a couple of sort of fun questions. Hopefully you get a little heated, because one of them might get you a little heated. Number one, you mentioned FIFA. What are your thoughts on your FIFA card?
Great question. I think right now it's where it should be. I haven't made my debut yet. I'll make a strong statement here. That'll happen this year. But I think it's where it should be, because I haven't played. I think after I start playing, it needs to be changed. That is what I'll say. And I'll let that sort of, I mean, yeah, they have my pace pretty low. I'm definitely not that slow. But you know, it's okay. They have it needs work.
All right. Do you have your player card?
I do.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, is it like a baseball card? Or is it like, because I've seen those guys hold massive pieces of cardboard.
Or is it like a physical thing? My FIFA player card or like my Topps player card? Like the
your FIFA player. Oh, both of them. Go with both of them.
Many members of my family have the Topps version, which I did not know existed. That was something. That was actually shocking to me. But I do have my FIFA card, and it is sensational. It is by far the best card I have ever used. And yeah, this was maybe not as cool as signing a professional contract, but like maybe like if that was a 10, this was like a 9.7. Like when I go into games and I'm just bullying dudes with a 99 rated card, that's better than any icon they have. It's very cool, honestly.
Who do you pair yourself with?
The FIFA GOAT, Iko Parra. Like FIFA GOAT. That Rule Breakers card is unbelievable. So I'm trying to, the way that EA Sports puts a hell of respect on Iko Parra's name, we're trying to just be the next FIFA Iko Parra. Fast and strong, and that all the sweaty kids out there like to use my FIFA card. That's the goal and the dream.
Amazing. Great answer. Final one, and this came a little bit from my stalker work.
Okay.
What was it like meeting Kobe Bryant, and what do you remember from meeting him?
Okay. Lovely, lovely question. He had an aura about him that was different than any other. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, there was a strong presence of a man, of a different type of man. It's hard to necessarily explain, but there was, yeah, all the things that I would like to strive to be in a person, like a very confident but not cocky, earnest, but yeah, very cool dude, like really down to heart. When I had met him, I definitely would say I kept it cool. In my head, it's like, yeah, this is Kobe Bryant right now. Like, this is definitely happening. But yeah, when we were talking, I didn't want to, it was probably maybe around May or so. I was just like, yeah, this guy definitely, I mean, he plays basketball, obviously. Everything he does is basketball related. But so I started asking him, I was like, yo, so as you do your soccer work, I was like, hey, heard you're a big soccer fan. How do you feel about the upcoming Champions League? Who you think's got it? And he's got a lot of influence within the Italian community just because of his father and different things. So he was more so rooting for the Juventus aspect. I don't think AC Milan was doing as hot as they are now. But he was very, very cool. And then we were just chit-chatting soccer. Not a lick about basketball. Because I mean, I don't know. He probably talks about that all the time. So, but soccer was the topic at hand. Yeah.
That's really, really cool. And I think with that, unless either of you have a follow-up to that unreal Kobe story, thank you for joining us, Nkosi. We genuinely, if we're over the moon that you were willing to do this, take the time to come on our little podcast and just talk a bit about a really important organization in the BPC and some of your journey in soccer. So thank you. We genuinely really, really, really appreciate it. But with that, that is the end of this podcast. Thank you for joining us. If you did tune in, we'll have another episode, real episode, where we'll dive into the entire world of soccer, hopefully this weekend. So keep an eye out for that. But without further ado, Black Lives Matter and peace. Thank you for listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast. Check out all of the contributors' written work at MLSMultiplex.com. This episode was brought to you by EarthEcho Foods. Use code MINUTE15 for up to 15% off.